talk about forming a lab colony of Chrysomyia rufaces and Chrysomyia megacephala. To begin, I just want to do a little background as to why these two species in particular were chosen. From my field research that I've done over the years, I've found that Chrysomyia rufaces and megacephala are both very prevalent in north central Florida on bear carcasses in particular, but also on other carcasses that I've used. They're also very popular on the carcasses in that the rufaces form a monoculture within 72 hours after death. And I wanted to take a little further look into their developmental rates and their behavioral issues and the way that they react in the colony in addition to the way they react in the field. And again, like I said, megacephala is closely related, obviously, to the rufaces, given that they're in the same genus and also found regularly in north central Florida. And I also needed to have megacephala as a food source for Chrysomyia rufaces, which I'll go further into detail about here in the next few slides. To begin, I had to get the flies. And this wasn't so easy. So we had to use a pig carcass to lay out in the field to actually collect both of these species. The megacephala larvae were collected as first instars a day after the death of the pig. And then 3 days later, Chrysomyia rufaces larvae were collected. These were taken into a rearing chamber that was held at 28 degrees centigrade with a 56% humidity, and the lights were kept on 24 hours. Here you can see, let me get the mouse to work, the larvae were kept in a container like such here. It's a large Ziploc container with spoiled chicken thighs is what we chose to use as our feeding medium. They were left in this container with either two or three pieces of chicken, depending on how many larvae were there at a time, until they hit the wandering stage, at which point they were moved into a similar container that contained 2 inches of sand. They stayed in the sand, of course, until pupation, at which point I removed them by hand and put them into a squat cup, which you can see the squat cup here with the pupa, and they were placed into rearing chambers for the adult emergence, along with water, sugar, and powdered milk. And at time of oviposition, I would put a piece of chicken thigh into another squat cup, place it amongst them, and wait for them to oviposit, which was about 200 to 300 eggs each batch. In addition, a protein supplement had to be used for the Chrysomyia rufaces. In this case, I used a moistened dried blood. I also wanted to check the occlusion rates when they emerged as eggs and also as pupa. So to do this, I took a couple eggs, placed them into a moistened towel, and left them in a petri dish for 24 hours, at which point I went back and counted the number of larvae that emerged. And with the pupa, these were separated out into small styrofoam cups, waited till emergence, and again counted the number of adults that survived. Here you can see the results of this, and with the megacephala, I got a 55% eclosion rate out of the eggs and a 68% out of the rufaces. But the pupa eclosion rate, I only got a 37.5% with the megacephala and 80% with the rufaces, and that's the adult emergence. In comparison, the developmental results were the growth rates were fairly similar with the two, with mating for the adult Chrysomyia rufaces took typically 4 days after adult emergence to occur, and then 6.5 days before they would actually oviposit, with the full developmental time from generation to generation being 22.7 days. With megacephala, mating occurred a little earlier at 2.6 days after emergence, with oviposition occurring about 4 days. That their full developmental time between each generation was the 24.5 hours. So although the Chrysomyia megacephala would mate and oviposit earlier than the rufaces, they took longer for development. And you can see here a comparison of the two. All the instar stages for the rufaces shown here in the blue are shorter time periods than that of the megacephala. And I just wanted to throw in a little picture, show you guys what these guys look like. I'm not sure if any of you have encountered Chrysomyia rufaces because they haven't really been determined to be a livestock pest or really found in those areas. But they're very unique larvae in that they have these fleshy tubercles that surround each body segment. So when you have them in the field study, you'll know right away. And they use these tubercles for feeding in addition to their mouth hooks. And then down here is the megacephala, which typically look like normal Caliphorid larvae that we have here in the United States. With these results, we found that the eclosion rate with the rufaces was 80%, and about 80% of those were also female. They had many more females than they had males. And my developmental time rates were found to be a day shorter than, day earlier than that of Bird and Butler, which is the only reference that I could find regarding any developmental rates of Chrysomyra rufaceus in a lab colony. The eclosion rate for Megacephala was 37.5, which is actually a poor eclosion rate. And I'm not, at this point, I'm not really sure as to why. It could have been the temperature at 28 degrees centigrade, but other researchers, Wells and Greenberg and Wells and Karahashi, have raised their colonies at 27 degrees Celsius. So that's not really a big difference. I'm not really sure why I had such poor eclosion rates. But the developmental rates were found to be the same. Just a little background and some discussion into it. When I started to do the colony, I had a lot of problems at first because I didn't want to actually get a pig carcass. I tried to use store-bought meat, which is what I reared them on, but the Chrysomyra rufaceus will not lay their eggs in outside on store-bought meats, like liver, chicken thighs, tried multiple different things, and I could never get that species specifically. So that's why we returned to using an actual pig carcass, which that always works. Another issue I had with the Chrysomyra rufaceus, they appeared to be temperature sensitive. When they were placed into the rearing chamber, we had a little bit of problem with it at first. It was reading at 28 degrees centigrade. They fixed the chamber, it went back down to 25 degrees Celsius, which is more common for growth chambers, but the rufaceus wouldn't produce well under this. I couldn't get them to oviposit at all at this temperature. So we raised it back up to 28, and was able to finally get some mating, but still had no oviposition. And I wasn't sure as to why, so that's when we led to the moistened blood, started to add the moistened dried blood as an additional protein supplement. And this ended up working out for us. As I mentioned, I had started the Megacephala colony as a food source. The reason why I did this for the rufaceus is that Chrysomyra rufaceus is known to be an obligatory predator of other calliford larvae. This has been observed in the field and in other laboratory studies by Goodbird and Goff, who have actually found him to be predaceous and even cannibalistic when placed under the situation. And in field studies, when you get the monoculture, that's typically because rufaceus has either eaten all the other larvae or driven them away from the carcass. But I was able to have this whole colony survive through every generation without feeding them any larvae, which this is the first publication of that, because unfortunately I couldn't find any other literature into the detailing of other people's colonies, because I'm not the first to colonize rufaceus, but apparently nobody's really talked about how they did this. But since I didn't have the larva predation, I think that's why the protein supplement might have been necessary, because like I said, I couldn't get them to oviposit without the additional protein. So I made some comparisons back with my field work to the colony work, and when I was thinking back over what I have seen in the years, Chrysomyra rufaceus is always present within the very few first minutes that I have a pig carcass or bear carcass out in the field, but they don't lay their eggs. They don't oviposit until 24 hours post-mortem, and this is after all the other calliford species have done so. So we always assume, well, they're doing that so they have something to feed upon. But it also might be they're actually doing that because they need the protein supplement, so maybe they arrive upon death to feed off of the blood seeping from the carcass, then 24 hours later they lay their eggs. At this point, it's not really positive as to what it is, but given what I have found in the colony and how they would not produce eggs without the blood, that's probably what's going on. And as I said, they were solely raised on chicken. Some future work would be to find another rearing material. The chicken was pretty nasty, and lab mates did not like it, so that's something I would like to find, possibly even a medium that's, you know, made that's not so much work to deal with. And maybe changing the ambient temperature, since I realized that maybe that wasn't the reason why the rufaceus weren't working at that high temperature, find a more optimal temperature for them to function at, and then also humidity changes of the rearing chamber. If there's any questions. Well, each cage typically got to about 250 to 300 each time. I only reared for five generations. I currently don't have the colony going anymore because I'm finished with that. But I never did have a lack in numbers. There was always, they were very good at laying the eggs and always got several larvae. And like I said, I never had any problems losing anybody. Yes?
Any ideas why you did not have a deposit on store-bought?
I think there are some papers out there saying some Calophorids more like smaller carcasses and some like larger carcasses, and it appears that the roof facies like larger carcasses and possibly that warmth that comes from a freshly dead carcass, because I've actually know people who've done work with similar species or smaller carcasses in the same area, and they don't get roof facies at all. So that might be why, or just the coldness, I'm not sure. Maybe there's just not enough coming off of the meat products to attract them. Yes?
You mentioned that the Rufaces larvae were using the tubercles to feed. I wonder if you could elaborate on that.
Well, they kind of use it to dig in and tear. They kind of like have a twisting action, and that's kind of how they grab hold. And at the same time, along with their mouth hooks, they also use them to rip the flesh off, in a sense, and kind of helps them accumulate the food a lot faster than I think other species. So I think they're kind of taken over because they're so rapid at what they're doing.
Any more questions? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.